Hello, and welcome to the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. It's episode 162, and I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mouse from Mars, and joining me this week are the creator of the brilliant webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
You sound like a children's TV presenter then, Dan. I love it.
Thank you.
Hello, little one.
And that voice there is the man who's nuttier than a Reese's Piece. It's Tony Esmond.
I felt sure you were going to call me the child catcher or something there. No. I was certain that was what was coming.
why would I call you that?
Because I made a child cry the other day.
You did.
And you said to me, I'm never going to let you forget that.
I was hoping to see a child cry today, but...
Why do you hope to see a child cry, Dan?
Because I went to see this art exhibition in the Tate Modern where there's this massive kind of wooden mannequin kind of been pulled around and changed.
I saw that.
I was about 50 yards from Tate Modern today.
Ah, okay. Well, it's
too late now, isn't it?
Yeah. So I kind of was walking out with a couple of my colleagues, and there was a dad bringing in his two young kids, and I was like, "Let's fucking go back in, see how they react to this." So they didn't want any part of it. So yeah, walked on. But go and see that exhibition. It's fucking great.
When is it actually on? Because I might be going to Tate Modern soon.
Limited days a week, might be Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, but check.
Right, okay.
Yeah, it's really good.
Don't start with that, Tony. Just get some culture in your life. All right, son.
Don't try and impress the listeners. We know you've heard there's a good Nando's near there. That's the only reason you're
here. That's the only reason I go anywhere. Because you can get free refills. And if any place does free refills, I'm going to eat there. Yeah. Do you know what else? You can get free.
Free refills? Two girls, one cup? Is that one?
Oh. 15 days.
Yeah, for 15... Well, for 14 days, isn't it, Dan?
14 days.
Yeah.
So we were right about that. I wasn't sure last week.
There's a 14-day free trial available from Comic House, our sponsor.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
There you go.
And they are the indie comic marketplace with a difference. I've got my script this week, so I'm not going to... It went so badly on last week's
That's
episode.
A new line, that one.
Yeah. But on Comic House, there's a huge selection of titles on their database. And if you self-publish, then you can issue a book on there for free. And when you sell a copy, they only take 1 pence commission, which is awesome. Because obviously, the self-publishing world, every penny counts. Every sale counts.
Yeah.
And especially with conventions. You know, how well do people do at conventions? I've read some interesting articles recently about that.
Nick did a really good thing in the mailer this very day, because we're recording early, and it got loads of good replies on the Facebook page, which is on fire. Nice. We talked about that a minute ago.
Yes. We'll give you a link to that in a minute as well. But Nick Prolix did a very interesting article about the sales of comics, etc., and events. But yeah, Comic House, they've got loads of indie titles on there. They've got a feature section on their site, comichouse.com, and they've also got their own app, which is always good. It's like Netflix for comics. There's only £3 a month subscription. You get access to an enormous library of digital indie comics, one of which I'm going to be recommending later today. Do we know what great stuff they got on there at the moment?
Got Bruce, Fraser fanzine, 100% biodegradable. There's a bunch of new alternate titles. You got The Skull by Jen Yildad, Heavy Manners, Brigantia, Stormhaven Tech, The Show. There's a bunch of shit on there. I'm going to have to try and read Bruce. I'm going to have to try and read Bruce before or after I go and see The Meg this weekend.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what? Oh, hang on. I will get onto this in a minute, because I'm going to do a tiny bit of movie talk in a second.
I haven't seen it yet, so don't ruin it. Right. I've seen it at the weekend.
We're not talking about anyone's private parts, we're talking about films.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's an awesome selection of titles on there. So if you want to find out more, sign up and get your 14-day free trial to dive headfirst into the amazing world of small press that we talk about every week on this show. Then check out comichouse.com. There you go. I was saying, movies. Firstly, The Meg. I went to see a little film just yesterday as we were recording this, actually. I mean, it would be a week ago. Who cares about time? Time is a concept.
God, we're breaking new ground today, aren't we?
We are. Now. We're going scientific. I've talked about the Tate Modern, and I'm talking about time. And and the film I watched was all about quantum physics as well, because I saw the Ant-Man and the Wasp, which anyone who listens to the show know that I had a little bit of a rant about the fact that we got it a month later than we normally do because of Dan's favourite pastime, football.
Yeah. Nationalism.
But yeah, I went to see it and I loved it. You know, that's no spoilers or anything, but proper good cinema time. It's just good fun. And I think that's,
I'm seeing it Saturday, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think you'll really enjoy it. There's a couple of nights. There's some lovely character bits. It's a character film. It's a smaller scale sort of film, which is what I liked about it. You know, we get
We've seen the big scale. We need to breathe a bit more, don't we? For a while,
exactly.
That's fine by me.
And sometimes you have so much sort of bombast, and the films get bigger and bigger that it can sometimes be boring. Does that make sense? Sometimes the more explosions you have, you're like, oh, I don't care about this. Just another explosion. But I really enjoyed The Ant-Man and the Wasp, and so thumbs up for me. But I'm not saying anything more than that.
When the end of Infinity War, when there's like the big fight, it's not that big, and I was fucking praising the heavens for that, because it was like just did what I needed to do and got over with. But I couldn't be sitting there for another 45 minutes of them battling. So just move on. Great. I wouldn't mind seeing. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Speaking of Marvel movies, we've got we've revealed the cover to issue 3, which is done by a Marvel movie storyboarder.
Yeah,
who has worked on the Avengers and Black Panther.
Yeah, and it's fucking ace.
Yeah,
and it looks great.
We revealed the cover to Awesome Comics issue 3, which is going to be released in October at Nottingham Comic Con. And go on, tell us who the fine artist for that cover is.
My pal Ed Traquino. Yeah, top guy.
Cheers, Ed.
Really kind of him. He's also, if anyone looks on the Facebook page, he's the one who did the 360 image of us interviewing Jack Kirby about a year ago.
Which is mind-blowing.
Mm. Which is so good. But he's also, me and him were sort of collaborators, and he was fortunate enough to meet his future wife in a museum in London, moved to New York. And he ain't looked back, and he's a cracking comic artist who still does comics, but... Yeah. As evidenced by our cover, but also is doing storyboarding. So if you look out in the credits of movies like Black Panther, you'll see his name.
Which is awesome.
He's done our cover.
Fantastic.
And it's brilliant. I can't wait for the issue to come out.
Thanks, Ed. He's a good geezer.
Yeah.
Good pal of mine. Miss him as he's over there, but he's done really well for himself. Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Do you think one day you could talk him into talking to us?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Right, okay.
I'd love to see
don't stop talking.
Brilliant. I'd love to see how the comic book skills transfer over to the storyboarding skills. Because I imagine that's quite an easy fit.
Yeah, there's a delineation between the two as well. I heard Gabriel Hartman talk a bit about it on a podcast once. And he does a lot of the big movies. He's Inception and Nolan's Batman and all that sort of stuff. And he talks a bit about the differences because you are drawing a scene as opposed to drawing a movement, aren't you, I suppose? In some ways. Yeah. It's an interesting difference, definitely. And you can see why people disappear off to that and, you know, also game design and stuff, but a lot of comic artists head off and do a bit of that because I think in some cases the money's quite good, isn't it?
I think that's one of the big draws. The money is a lot better.
But speaking of the Meg, though, got a trailer for that. I don't understand why. Whenever I go to a cinema now, I used to look forward so much to seeing the trailers, you know, on the big screen. I know we can all see trailers as soon as they hit YouTube or, you know, they're posted wherever now. And I normally do. I'm a fan of a good trailer. I don't watch too many because they're normally full of spoilers these days. Homecoming. But I'm sorry, but that trailer just gave away far too much.
Yeah. What's that other one that did recently? They basically just gave away the entire fucking beats of the film. I was like, fuck's sake, why do you even bother with this?
Yeah, they do it so much on so many trailers these days. But what I noticed was, like, the trailers in cinemas, they chop them up now. So I'm so used to seeing, like, these, not even, like, red band trailers, because we had one for Venom before.
That was the trailer.
It was chopped to bits. Completely lost all of its sort of impact. And the trailer for The Meg, which, I'm sorry, I mean, it didn't. There's nothing in that trailer that's really that shocking, is there?
No,
it's and that was cut to bits, and that completely lost its impact. And I'm a little bit, we're fans of giant sharks on this show. You know how we feel about the book Carthago and that world. I'm a bit worried about Meg, Meg, not Marge. I'm not worried about her. Anyone who listened to last week's show knows Marge is doing fine. She's she's gonna have a Facebook
more than fine.
She's off on holidays reading the things we suggested.
Yep.
Yep. trying to order drinks from the barman who thinks she's weird.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not one that's normally like, you know, if you're going to make a shark movie, it needs to be gory. You know, I'm not one of these. You have to make it full. But I would have thought with a film like that, surely you need a bit of impact, and there's got to be moments that are like a bit wince inducing. But from what I hear, it's a PG-13. They're going for the family friendly sort of audience.
Well, don't forget, Jaws wasn't an X, was it? Jaws was a PG.
Really?
Was Jaws a PG?
Yep.
Fucking hell.
I saw that at the cinema when I was like 9 or something. Yep.
Bloody hell.
Yeah, it was never...
Jaws is now 15, though, isn't it? Isn't it?
Is it? Are you sure?
Oh. I think it might be.
I definitely saw it at the cinema.
It was a PG.
Yeah.
Because when I went to see Predator the other week, it's now reclassified as a 15.
What?
Okay.
Yeah. And
takes the fun out of
it. Because it's usually like sexual swear words bring their certification up, and that's just fucking littered with it. I mean, the man's spine gets ripped out on screen. So there's quite a lot of...
it's that classic thing, isn't it? I mean, like the Walking Dead TV show, they can put as much gore in it as they want, and the censors are fine with
it. Swearing.
But if they only lay one F-bomb a season, do you know what I mean?
The whole thing with that kind of... I was hoping that Meg's going to be as good as Deep Blue Sea, because I think that's a great benchmark.
That's a gem, isn't it?
Yeah. I quite like that film.
Yeah, I like that film. I do. It doesn't pretend to be arty-farty. It's just, it is what it is. Yeah. There's like these super sharks fucking people up. And it's great.
Yeah. Before it's anyone writes in,
at the moment,
we're not
Jaws.
Saying it's
there
a classic.
Okay. Yeah.
What was that?
12A. Jaws is a 12A. Yeah,
I can understand that, because I've watched some sort of 12 certificate film that like 12A's sort of like, you know, you have to be older to accompany someone lower than 12, isn't it, I think?
Yeah. Which used to be what a PG was, wasn't it? You used to have to go with someone, didn't you, I suppose?
And I've seen some sort of 12 certificate films where I thought, bloody hell, they're mashing people up in this.
Wasn't the Batman the first PG 13?
It was the first 12A. Yeah, because I remember there was a bit of a thing at the time saying, someone's had a few quid for that, haven't they?
Yeah. No, it was a 12 certificate, wasn't it? Wasn't it Spider-Man was the first 12A because they added 12A?
Oh, yeah, it was a 12, wasn't it? It was a new certificate, wasn't it? Yeah. A 12. Yeah. I'll tell you, talking to trailers, the one that really fucked me off was Civil War when Spider-Man arrives. I thought, fuck, if I'd have been sitting there, we talked about this years ago, didn't we? Do you remember?
Show their hand.
Yeah. Thankfully, like the giant man moment, I missed it. You had that spoiled because of a toy, didn't you?
I did, mate. Yeah, because they were giving away like an arm and a leg, and all. You know the way they give it a bit away with each toy. And I thought, fuck's sake.
See, I managed to avoid that, and so when that happened, you know, that was amazing.
I took my son to a toy shop, and they had all like the Civil War Lego, and it was just like every sort of big scene in the film. It was like, bang, up it comes, and it's, there's a giant Ant-Man. I guess that happens in the film.
Right.
So, and that was like a month before it even came out in the UK.
I will say this. Like, when it came to Infinity War, for instance, and we're not going to talk about any spoilers or anything on this show, so don't worry about that. I literally went on almost an internet blackout. I'd seen a couple of great trailers that, to be honest, didn't give away too much. I really liked their trailers. I thought, people theorise, and you get a million YouTube videos talking about, I think this happens. I'm like, fuck off, you have no idea. I liked the trailers and then just left it. Ignored all the clips and pretty much ignored the internet. And then when I watched that was just a brilliant experience.
Yeah.
And obviously with Ant-Man coming out a month later, I had to avoid some of the websites that I may have gone to before just to do my sort of entertainment or comic, you know, just catch up.
Pornhub.
Yeah, those ones, you know, ex-hamster and all that jazz. That's a different kind of clickbait, though, isn't it, really? but it was so refreshing to, like, have a break from the internet, you know, those sort of sites.
Yeah. Well, I think we get it with comics these days as well, because they're so desperate to sell on an event.
Yeah,
you hear such and such is killed at the end of this or whatever, you know, and it's like, oh, fuck's sake. There's a big Marvel event where something happens. I'm not even going into it. And that was proper spoilt for me as well.
Yeah. That seems to be a Bleeding Cool's thing as well, don't they? They get people on the... They'll pay money for someone to provide them with a copy of the comic when it turns up for the embargo so they can get the scoop.
Okay. It's like, but the thing is, it just spoils like the wonder of comics like that. Because, for instance, I don't keep up to date with the latest, Marvel storyline news and stuff. When it comes to these articles, I stay away from it because I just read the books. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just pop my head in and out. And I
remember, when people wait for the trades now, or they're on Comixology, the 6 month later thing.
Yeah.
It fucking does ruin it for people.
One of the great experiences I had recently, I know we talked about an X-Men comic that was leading up to the wedding of Colossus and Kitty Pryde.
Oh yeah, X-Men Gold.
And we talked about how there was this sort of annual, this special that was, a waste of money. I hate saying it.
Yeah, I agree, mate. I bought it and I agree with you.
Absolute waste of money. But I was still intrigued in with that storyline. So when the actual sort of numbered issue came along of that, the nuptials, I wanted to see what happened. There was twists and turns, like things. And because I didn't know much about it, it all surprised me and therefore made the story so much better. So when there was a real twist sort of ending, which I'm not going to say what it is, but if you look at the weekly comic books, you can probably figure out what the way storylines are going now. But I didn't see that coming. And when it happened, over the course of like five pages, it really surprised me and I loved it. I really enjoyed that moment. And that's, you kind of have you got to put blinders on sometimes, haven't you?
Yeah.
On another subject, I have to say that started really strong for me, that X-Men Gold. And you had some great art, including Lambeau. Lambeau did an excellent issue for that. And then it just suddenly it dropped off and just looked like bad webcomic. I think it's getting cancelled though, isn't it? I think I don't think it's on for this world.
Yeah.
I think generally for me, like storytelling, when someone's putting so much work to kind of build you up and build up all these plot lines, and then it gets the kind of punchline spoilt and taken away from you, it really bugs me. Don't like that at all.
And when Viper dies, paint what?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Oh, don't spoil that for me, Tony.
I've been working on, that's gone in full production mode on Viper Part 3 now.
Yeah, we're almost there, guys.
Yeah, cranking it out.
We've got less than a month now to the deadline.
I know. Basically, I'll bang out 2 pages a week to get it done. So,
yeah.
Here's a question for you. What do you feel is appropriate in terms of work in progress or like artwork and things like that? Because obviously I'm inking pages and like obviously Nick's working on pages and Tony's getting pages. We all get stuff that we want to show, but there's always this thing that sort of I hold back on a lot of it because I want people to experience it.
Even mainstream comic creators, I don't want to see every single page you draw, and I think there's some there used to be a bit of a trend for that, but a lot of people have pulled back from that now, which I'm pleased about. But I don't really want, other than like the odd image, I don't really want anything like that at all.
No.
A comic that I'm working on, I don't really want that showing.
I think when we got story beats that are like, you're trying to go for a shock or a surprise. You have to really think about what you're going to show online. For instance, with Murder Road, there's so many different. In part two, there's a lot. I had John Ottaway came up to us, True Believers, and sort of said, it properly kicks off in part two, which is good.
Yeah,
I'm glad. But there was so much stuff that I kind of wanted to show people in that because that was when the action really kicked in. But I had, I still had to hold back because I didn't want it to be spoiled for anyone. Because I think seeing it when you're reading it. It's a completely different experience, isn't it? You don't want people to guess your story points as well from the... People always try and... we all do it. You see an image and then even subconsciously your brain might try and figure out why that image is... that part
in
of
there.
It? Yeah.
And I want people to start on the comic on page one, panel one that he's drawn, and I want people to read it. I don't want people to go, page one... Yeah, read that. Page 2. Oh, I've seen that before. Skip to page 3.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the same impact,
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. You got a heads up of what's coming up in the story, so you can kind of put two and two together and it doesn't really play out. But I think little kind of sketches of panels.
The odd thing is fine. I think that's fine.
You can't really take anything from it.
Yeah.
That's just, get the old hype train powered up and rolling along.
You got to pick the pick the right panel as well, though, haven't you? Because there was some stuff certainly in Murder Road that I'm extremely proud of, like in terms of the way it looks, but it may be quite a revealing story point. So I don't want to post that because you know it could be a spoiler. Yeah. So.
Definitely. It's like when you're farming and you're sowing a field for crops. Sometimes you need a really good length to get a good lay. Do you know what I mean?
How big is your length?
Yeah, well, it's as long as it needs to be, mate, sometimes. Really? Do you know what I mean? Mm. Yeah. I think when you lay it down, you know, and you sort of hold on to it for long enough, then it's all right, you know.
Do you ever get worried about bushes?
Sometimes you have to contend with them, to be honest with you. Sometimes they're bigger than you expect, I'll be honest. Sometimes you need a good clean.
Some of the older ones can be quite bushy.
That's true.
They've not been tended to since the 70s. They tend to go all the way up. You have a little bit of a ladder, don't you?
But and that's probably when you need a hoe.
Ding ding ding. Nearly went off topic there.
Yeah, thank fuck we didn't lose it there.
Next week on Cultivating Your Crops.
Next week on Gardener's Question Time.
The Garden Sutra. Anyway, as you can tell, folks...
Should we talk about True Believers?
Hang on.
You've got a script.
Well, no, I don't have a script. I was just going to say, as you can tell by now, folks, we don't have a guest this week.
No.
We've had guests for about 2.5 months. So it's just a Three Amigos show, and it's just going to be...
And we're doing it early, aren't we? Yeah. We're doing a weekday one, which always goes a bit weird.
Yeah. We're just going to talk about anything and everything. We've got a couple of questions. Leftover questions, aren't they?
From that one we did about a month ago with Nick.
So, you know, there's going to be some nice topics of conversation. And, we've got a few things to talk about. Obviously got my entertainment bit out of my system. We were at a show recently.
We were.
On Sunday the 2nd of August. Is that right?
5th of August.
5th. The 5th of August. It's already gone weird, see? But no, we mentioned it on a little bit on the last week's show. But we were at the True Believers Summer Variant, which for the first time we hadn't been. It's the second time this event has taken place, but it's the first time we were there for the day.
Yeah.
And it was a lovely day.
It was nice, wasn't it?
It was really nice, wasn't it?
Fucking sunny. Yeah. And we had a nice, cool sort of church hall, didn't we?
God, I tell
sort
you what.
Arrangement.
I was so happy about that because the weather was absolutely baking.
Yeah, the best thing about our table is right in front of it. It had someone buried. There was like a tomb, and everyone who tripped over it—I think 8 people. Andy was counting. We were at a competition, and everyone who tripped over it, we said, "Be careful, Dan."
Yeah,
we pretended that you were in that tomb, Dan. Yeah, it was funny. And you died.
Yeah. I thought there was going to be 5 people that would trip over it. And what was the last number?
I think it was 8 or 9, wasn't it?
I think we got 9.
Because every time someone tripped over, literally, as soon as they did it, we were shouting over at the Horde Comics guys, 7!
So that was good fun. So, it was a really nice day, though. I mean, obviously, Stuart, Andy, and the True Believers mob, they always put on it. It's a well-organised sort of machine, isn't it?
Yeah, very good.
Yeah.
So I've got a little list of notable people.
Go for it.
The Mighty Prolix was next to us, who kept just accusing me of lying all day. Everything I'd say, he says, "That's not true." It amused me quite a lot. He was good company when he had a good day, actually. If you look at the mailer, which we'll put in the show notes, he did all right for a show. I sold some stuff for him as well. I think it was probably down to me then. Russell and Emily Olsen. They were good, weren't they? And I have in front of me a £5 piece of artwork from Russell that is fucking amazing.
Yes, he awesome. Does. And I've got a couple of pieces of artwork from Russell as well. If you see Russell at a show...
What ones did you get in the end?
Well, say which ones you got for which one you got.
I got like a Batman climbing over the head of a sort of statue. You know, it's like a Justice Liberty statue thing, done in black with a sort of red over the top of it. It looks amazing.
Yeah,
yeah,
it looks lovely. Because Russell's essentially got like a, he's got like a box with loads of, he's just drawing all the time. The dude's an inspiration, and like, you know, and because rather than have them lying around, you can go to his table, and he's got coloured stickers, so you know they could be from like £1 to £5, or you know they're all between £1 and £5, aren't they? I think
they're nothing more than £5, is it?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I had a look through, and I got one of the Mad Balls.
He did, didn't he? I forgot that one. Yeah, he did, yeah. As soon as I pulled that out, he went, "That's mine."
I got a Captain America, which is properly badass, and a Miss Marple.
Oh, you didn't you? Yeah, he said that'll help on the way home. He said, "I don't know, you remember that?" But you know.
and those three. Well, I had to pull over at the services. And I got those three for I think about £6.50, £7. Absolute song, and it's amazing artwork. Yeah, and it's all kinds of things as well. This is it's a treasure trove. That little box, you know, I love discovering stuff like that. But anyway, Tony, I broke up your list. Carry on.
No, that's good. Susie and Chris Gander, Susie and the Beard, they were good. And Susie, we could segue into your panel. You did a panel, didn't you?
I did indeed do a panel. Well, we did both do panels, but my panel was about drawing in comics. I had Susie Gander, Russell Olson, and Lorenzo Etherington. I met him face to face for the first time.
They were ever so nice about the show as well. We all had a good chat with them. It was nice chat with them.
Huge thanks to them and all their supporters for supporting the show as well. They were great. The panel was good. It was my first time sort of manning a panel without it being an awesome pod panel.
Was he? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I haven't. I've been on panels, but I haven't sort of like been the chair. Obviously, you're the veteran when it comes to that, Tony. You're very good at that.
That would have come quite easy to you, I'm sure, Vince. You've done enough of these shows to be able to take the reins.
I sat down and Lorenzo was like, he jokingly just sort of said, "I guess you've got like a long list of well thought out questions you're going to ask us." I said, "Nope, I've only got one," and then God knows where it's going from there. so it's pretty much like every show, because the way from this show, it's a casual conversation, and because of that, you get people talking, and then you can't stop them. I did have the moment where Stu from True Believers gave me the wind up sign at the end of the room, because everyone was just
technically very similar to the wanker sign.
No, I didn't get that sign. I think he might have been suggesting something else to you, Tony.
Fair enough.
Yeah, but that was good. So thank you to everyone that turned up at that panel, and
we had a great time, didn't we?
Also, it was interesting to learn that, for instance, Susie Gander came from animation and was a storyboard artist that moved into comics rather than. Like the other
I never knew that.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
Yeah, she started up in animation and then was a big fan of Tomb Raider and got into comics that way.
So, okay.
Whereas the other guys had sort of grown up more with it, you know, the Asterixes, you know, all the other sort of great old school comics. Susie was it was a nice sort of variation of like different experiences and you know, because it was all about drawing, talking about the processes, the do's, the don'ts, and. You know, I kept the focus well off me because no one wants to hear me ramble on.
True.
He says, having rambled on for about 3 minutes.
Yeah.
What episode podcast are we on?
Touche, butcher. Touche. But it was a great panel. So thanks to everyone that came along. And you did a panel as well, didn't you, Tony?
Yeah. Should we get the obvious story out of the way? Right. So I did a panel with the Mighty Milmo. Steve Tanner and Andy Conduit Turner, and at the start, as it started, there was sort of some kids like playing about in the stairs next to where the table was, or the chairs were, you know.
Yeah.
So I went, because I'm like cool dad, do you know what I mean? I thought I'll sort this out. So I went downstairs and said, and I didn't really pay any attention to who the kids were. They were just sort of kids there. So I said, I did the old "Hey guys, keep it down," you know, which they sort of just blatantly ignored. Yeah, do you know what I mean? It was just sort of one of those sort of things. So we carried on, and I got a bit of a twitch in my eye, and I could see Milmo was like slowly becoming more incensed. So Milmo went down and gave, as the panel went on, she went down and gave it a bit of a, come on, guys, come on. You know what I mean? To one of them.
Yeah.
And then it went quiet for 5 minutes, and then it sort of started again. And she said to me, we can't put up with this. And she sort of stomped downstairs. And you could just make out in the distance a bit of, like that. And then it went quiet again. So she did very well. I'm very impressed with her. But yeah, it was. And then later on, Stuart came over. And actually, the panel was really good. I would say I've listened back to it now, apart from the sort of noise of children. It was actually good.
Yeah. It was a nice panel room as well, wasn't it? And you had like these sort of old sort of leather chairs that sort of made you feel like you were Parkinson rather than.
Chairs, weren't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Stuart came over surrounded by with his kid. He said, how did the panel go? And I said, oh, it was good. There was some kids making some noise out. And at which point I realised, right as I said it, that the one of the kids I'd spoken to was his kid, who then sort of filled up and ran off. And I had to later on chat to him about his Funkos and stuff to cheer him up and make sure it was all right. But I felt like, and as soon as the kid ran off, Vince looked at me, gave me that sideways look and said, I will never let you forget you've done that.
Oh, poor kid.
But so we had a chat, and I always like to finish on a joke question. And my question was, if you go on holiday with a pre-existing, you know, made up fictional character, who would it be? And where would you go? And everyone had sort of little humorous answers, you know. And Andy goes, I'd go on holiday with Spider-Man. Because I quite like swinging. And then he sort of maintained eye contact with me in this family-friendly room. And I turned to Steve Tanner and I went, you like a bit of swinging, don't you, Steve? And he went, And I could just see Milmo going, for fuck's sake. In her eyes. Yeah. But no, it was a good day. Everyone was good. And we got quite a few good questions from the audience. It was quite nice. So there you go. That was the two panels. Shall I carry on?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah.
Aaron and Kate from Little Heroes. They were nice. Good. Had a good chat with them. And Andy Hanks, who is a sort of co-organizer with Stuart, he brought me a sort of ashcan version of the comic he and I and Aaron are working on. Which I showed you, Vince, didn't I? I showed you that, didn't I?
Yeah, it looks bloody amazing.
Yeah, it looks incredible. And not down to me, down to Andy, who is about to start painting it. So that is going to look fucking amazing.
There was one... I did tell Tony this as well, that the project that they've got in the works is very exciting. And it's an all-ages sort of... sort of instructional, educational, and you know, it's something.
Bit of fun as well,
Bit of fun for kids. And there's only one line that I really knew was Tony Esmond. And
what was that?
The one at the end, which I think it's something like, oh, it hurts.
Oh, yeah.
I just read that line, Tony's written that.
Just I looked to camera and wink at you. Yeah, so that's good. Hey, Andy's fucking... Yeah. First comic Andy's done. I could not believe it. It's fucking amazing.
He was doing life drawing classes on the day as well.
Yeah, they were out there doing drawing, weren't they? People kept popping out to the little green area, which is sort of in the middle of all the buildings, and doing some live drawing. Yeah, it's good. I bought Russell a Joe Staten E-Man, which he liked, and I bought Sarah Harris a Don McGregor Killraven comic. Just nice one. Yeah, just spread the love about. And there was a good little bit of... I bought you an X-Men Essential, didn't I, Vince?
Oh, you did. Number two. Oh,
very sexy.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Thank you, T.
Yeah. Cog Life were there. Good lads.
Yeah.
And they're one of them's actually putting a gig on, and one's on the door, he was telling me. Putting a gig on at Thought Bubble, so I'm going to pop along to that. That should be good. The aforementioned Hall Comics. Rachel Lee Carter, who gave us a couple of her zines.
Oh, yeah. Is that the Nicolas Cage one? I really want to read that. I was going to steal it off you. I didn't manage to steal it off.
I don't know why you didn't. I thought you'd taken it, and then I found it in my bag when I got home. I thought you had that one, dude.
No, yeah. I was planning to steal it. That's yours. Yeah. Yeah.
That's the one that looked a little bit like Dan on the back cover.
Yeah.
That's that picture.
Yeah.
Yeah. A little bit. Exactly like.
What was that Cage role? What film was that from?
I can only think it was Peggy Sue Got Married or something like that, was it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It wouldn't have been. Yeah. No, it wouldn't have been Wild at Heart, would it?
Have you ever seen that Cage one where he thinks he's a vampire? I've never seen it.
Is it Kiss the Vampire where he actually eats a bug, doesn't he?
Yeah. Oh, I tell you what, if you want something funny, just watch clips of that movie.
Yeah, the fucking acting dialed up to like 11.
Oh my God, it's so funny. So funny. I mean, obviously, I think the film's about a man having like a midlife crisis or something like that. But...
Or is it like a metaphor, is it? Yeah. Sort of thing? Yeah. Okay. And Sean Jefferson. And we got quite a few people, listeners, come over the table, didn't we?
We mentioned
Sarah Harris. Tom Curry and Emily came over.
Yeah.
Great to finally meet Emily, actually. That was good, wasn't it?
Her first ever convention. So.
Yeah, and now she's thinking about doing some writing, I see, on Twitter, which is nice.
And she's a scientist. Yeah. So
she is.
If we ever talk to her on the show, she'll make us all look really thick. Well, actually, no, she'll make us look thicker than we are.
Yeah, we're not too difficult.
We're thick.
Yeah.
Emily Coit, I think her name is. Yeah. I think that's how you pronounce it. Todd Oliver, John Ottaway brought the family along. That was good.
I will give a shout out to Tom, actually, who brought me a copy of a 2000 AD annual. He brought us some 2000 AD annuals.
Oh, he did, didn't he? Yeah, that was nice. Yeah, it was good.
I like mine because it had Rogue Trooper in it.
Oh, you like Rogue Trooper?
I do like Rogue Trooper.
And then I went back and sort of sat in an Ibis and did a load of work on my computer. And in the morning, I had breakfast with Kate and Aaron, which was quite nice. We had a sort of little heroes chat about sort of future plans and stuff like that. It was really nice. Yeah, it was a great day.
Nice.
Yeah, Stuart put on a cracker there. And it was only $3.50 and then kids were free, wasn't it? Is that right?
That's fantastic.
Yeah, and there were loads of kids.
Did you get any other room full of?
I did a little bit in one of the rooms.
Right,
a lot of sort of art tables and stuff. Yeah.
Oh, was it all that sort of thing? Was it? Yeah, I didn't get in there.
No, it was good. It was good stuff. Good stuff. And on the motorway, I had to pull over because.
You had car trouble, didn't you?
My engine was overheating.
Completely overheated, but you know that's not for now. I'm over it now.
That's because I made you drive me to that car park.
It probably was. Yeah, it gave up the ghost. But yeah, yeah.
Is it knackered?
You
don't know.
Well, it's not completely knackered, but I'll tell you more off air. But essentially, it's it's not exactly what you wanted to happen on probably the hottest day of the year when you're driving.
No. Oh, mate. Yeah.
Yeah.
The worst thing is, we went to the car park, and there's obviously two car parks that are right next to each other that share the same postcode.
Yeah.
And we went to the wrong one, and I was sort of wandering around. We couldn't get into it, could we?
Yeah.
Wandering around, thinking this doesn't look like the same car park. And then you had to reverse back down one of those sort of windy slopes that you go all the way up, you know. And then I took you to another car park, and you said to me, "Why do you always make me come to places that look like I'm going to get abused or murdered?"
He does, you know.
Well, when we were 10, it's away from the cards.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But no, the Summer Variant was a really nice event, actually. Short, sharp, enjoyable. We hope everyone that was exhibiting there had a great day, and everyone that went there seemed to have a good day. You know, there's lots
it really
of
shot by, didn't it?
Yeah, lots so of images on Facebook and stuff of like people having fun and stuff.
Always my experience with cons when you're at the tables, they just seem to absolutely blast by.
Yeah,
yeah. We didn't have a moment where we weren't chatting to someone, did we? It was one of those.
It was good.
So many times now, when next time I go to one, it's like go out and get what I want to get, then come back because. So many times I'll go and get that later, and before you know it, it's fucking 6 o'clock and everyone's packed up. You're like, oh fuck.
Change that. Good.
Yeah.
Nice.
So,
what's next for us? What's next? I've got a thought bubble. Otherwise, it's Nottingham, isn't it?
Hopefully, Nottingham. Yeah, Nottingham.
Yeah, as we speak, Froome Comic Day was yesterday. And
Was it? Yeah. Okay.
If I've managed to somehow, by some sort of miracle, managed to get some audio. I'm not saying I will, but if I did, then you'll hear it now.
But that probably didn't happen,
so don't worry. You know, I'm covering all bases there.
Yeah, well done you. We're pros, aren't we, to the end.
Yeah, yeah. But we're talking to Lizzie and Connor, who helped set up that day of Disconnected Press, to get them on the show fairly soon. So
they're
good friends of ours. So
Yeah,
so I'll tell you more about that on the next show. We're kind of a bit stuck, aren't we? So
Yeah, we don't know. We've got a next show, do we? We sort of decided, don't we?
Yeah.
Who can make it?
Yeah, we're just nailing down the scheduling as we speak. So it's exciting time.
Such professionals
we are, aren't we?
that equates to sort of begging people to come on generally. Yeah.
But in terms of shows that the ACP or Tony's going to be at, I think the next one coming up is going to be Thought Bubble in September. September the Tony, have you got the dates to hand?
Oh, I haven't got it in front of me, mate. Sorry.
I think it's around the 16th or something.
Yes. Oh, fuck. I can't remember anyway. I'll be there both days and I'm on the No Brow table. So come and see me. That's buy some No Brow books because I'm sure there'll be a good deal on. And it'll also be around the same time that we drop Hilda. So be a good time to get your Hilda on.
Yeah.
As we say.
So head on over to the No Brow table and see Tony being professional.
Yeah.
Which he never is when he's on our table.
I've got to put a shirt and tie on as well.
Oh, really?
No, mate, that up on my fuck.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah. We were.
Well, that seems unlikely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to wear my Coldplay a Shite t shirt, but I think that probably won't go down well because there'll be a few Coldplay fans there, won't there?
Yeah. Yeah, but then after Thought Bubble in October, end of October, we'll be at Nottingham Comic Con, and that's when we're launching issue 3 of the comic, as we've said. But if you want to get it before
then. There's another one. There's another one before then.
What, is there?
Yeah, there's Nice on the 1st September.
Oh, yeah, because you're going there. You don't have a table. You're going there, though, aren't you?
Yeah, I don't know whether. I know Shane contacted me a while ago and said, did I want to run a panel? But I'm not sure if he still wants me to. So I've got tickets anyway. But and then the Sunday, the day after that, we're going to the Comic Mart, aren't we?
Yeah.
Wow, yeah. Christ.
Yeah.
That's in the railway quick.
I've got my bus tickets.
Have you bought them already?
Yeah. Get them early, save money.
How much was your bus? How much is your bus?
I'm not telling you that on air.
Fuck you, tell us. Come
no. But I will tell you, it's not the mega bus.
Anyway. Okay. Is it under a fiver return?
No. I'm not that cheap.
Okay. Well.
What do you mean? Well.
Yeah, if I could get it for a fiver, I would, that's what I'd pay. That's
well,
mega
bus. Yeah. Well, yeah.
I wouldn't allow myself to go on a bus with council estate scum, but yeah, I would. I don't know what you mean.
You know, the commoners, sometimes you need to dilly dally with them. pretend like you're one of the people. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I ain't been on a fucking bus in years.
I like to sit at the back of the bus because you get more money for your ride. You know,
that's a lie. Actually,
isn't that where the toilets are? So it's just easy access.
Yeah, sometimes I just stick my arse in through the door, just go.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because you never know when you're going to go, do you, Tony?
Sometimes it just happens.
You're like a bottle of cherry aid that someone shook up.
But imagine if you're holding the bottle upside down.
Oh.
it's like a kebab that you've dropped on the floor
and then's been
run over.
Yeah, it smells like ginger beer and sick.
How many
listeners do you think we lost then?
None.
No. Yeah.
I do like ginger beer. I drink ginger beer 2 or 3 times a week. It's one of my favourite drinks.
Do you really? Is that you actually being honest? I like ginger.
That is me being genuinely honest because ginger is good for your stomach as well.
It's true.
And after I had most of my stomach removed last year, I try and be careful, and I have ginger beer 2 or 3 times a week. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah. And I can't even make a joke about that because he's actually telling the truth. but I will say, you must like a particular brand of ginger beer then.
I don't know. I like the ones they do in Pret. That's quite nice.
Oh, look at him. He goes to Pret.
What's the mainstream one they do?
I love that. That's what makes me a wanker. After everything I've done in my life. But the fact I'm going...
drinking ginger beer. Pret.
The thing is, it makes me a hypocrite because I do like a Pret. I live in Bath. You all know I'm a wanker. Anyway.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't even know you lived in Bath. It's near the other bit.
I live in the gutter. Anyway.
Right.
Right.
So, should we do the questions?
Yes. Yes. We went. Yeah.
There's only three. There's three that were left over.
Okay.
The first one is it got asked twice. So it got asked by Peter Davies. I like calling him Peter. It's politer.
Yeah.
And Sarah Aloysius Harris. They both asked, why do we do this? minimal, not how, because, well, we don't know how we do it, but why do we do this? Minimal, if any, financial returns. What, and what motivates us to do it? So, gentlemen, what motivates you to do it?
I think I'm in some kind of Jacob's Ladder kind of scenario, and one day I'm just going to wake up and it's all... I'll either be dying or it's all a dream.
Yeah. I suffer from terrible guilt and nightmares from it, so sometimes I have to get away from the reality of my life by writing comics. Yeah. How's that for an answer? So, I don't, because I just fucking love it. I just want to be involved in comics all the time. Yeah.
Are they talking about making comics or the show?
Making comics, I think. Yeah, well, let's do both. Let's do making comics.
Yeah. Go on then, Dan. You take it away.
I had the proof for like the latest issue that I was going to do over this week and upload it. And one of the other people came over and looked at it and said, "When do you find the time to do all this, Dan?" It's like, I fucking do this all the time. It's like I'm drawing and making this comic every fucking moment I get. So that's how I can get it done. But I just love doing it. Yeah. Just from the storytelling to the drawing to, there's not an aspect of it I don't like.
Yeah.
So,
essentially, if I'm not thinking about work while I'm at work, I'm thinking about comics. I literally wander around thinking about, oh, that'd be a good idea. Or like, I remember that storyline. Or I wonder what that art's like. You know, I just want it to sort of be part of everything I do almost. You know what I mean? And now that I'm reaching retirement age, it's literally, I'm just going to lay on the floor and do snow angels in comics for the rest of my life. You know?
The thing is, I don't even always necessarily put comics as the subject. I think if I was to boil it down to its basics, I just want to tell stories. That's completely. That's why I'm terrible. You know, at, you know, the organisation things. You know, the financial things. You know, all of that. That, you know, if you could have like the, if you, money was no object and you had a team, sort of working for you. You know. Then you could just concentrate on one thing. I'd just be like telling stories. I've always wanted to tell stories, and because I love.
I'll take it one further for you, mate. I'd say you want to tell stories and be told stories. I think that's where the comes in.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you'd just be writing and creating. You would be reading as well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh yeah, totally. Because stories inspire me, whether it be you know, true stories, fictional stories, whatever. And I don't understand the people that are just creating and not reading anything. And I don't necessarily mean comics.
Yeah.
I'm not saying talking comics, because there are lots of people who don't have time to read. You know, they're making graphic novels or comics or whatever, and they don't have time to read them. You know, I'm not saying, oh, you have to read comics to make comics. That's fucking bollocks.
You have to have read them at some point.
Yeah.
Yes.
But there's no requirement for you to like be reading Keeping Up with the Avengers or something. No.
Yeah.
You know, I know what you mean.
But you know, surely you're reading something, or surely you're taking in some sort of like narrative, you know. If you're just working in a bubble, then you can't be inspired by anything.
Like a crime author, I wouldn't imagine, it's pure speculation, but a lot of them read crime novels. They're more interested in reading kind of true life stuff that's going on to find inspiration and source material for their next one. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they're still taking their input.
I was chatting to Kate and Aaron Rackley at breakfast the other day, and we were talking about, you know, why are we so invested in it? And the answer is, sometimes you need an output. You need that creative element to your life, I think, sometimes, don't
Definitely,
you?
Definitely, yeah.
You know, when you work in a job that isn't perhaps as creative as mine, certainly. Well, mine's creative in different ways, but, you know, when it isn't that sort of artistic element, I really need that as part of my life as well to remain satisfied, I think, you know?
Yeah.
I've seen sometimes when people repress that kind of thing, and then they're given a chance to do it, and it's like they absolutely come to life with creating things.
Yeah.
And it's like you really need that kind of output and that release. So
there is that, and like I can certainly say from my own experience that I spent a good part of my 20s not doing it. Do you know what I mean? Talking about it, but not, you know, procrastination, that terrible word that kills many a creator, I think. And I spent a long time doing it, and then it got to a point where it was put up or shut up, and you know, then the Red Mask was sort of born, and then, you know, fast forward just a couple of years, really. It's only been a couple of years since I've published my first comic, and I'm talking to you guys. We talk to all these amazing creators, you know. It's an absolute gift that keeps on giving, I think.
I think comics as well is a language as well, isn't it? It's when your eye gets into it. It's totally. Almost something you can't do without, I think.
That's so weird, Tony, because I said exactly the same sort of thing on my panel.
Oh, did you?
Really? Yeah, okay. I was talking about how... I actually feel quite highbrow now. But comics is a language, and just like learning any language, like French and stuff, you can't just sort of pick it up and just do it. You have to learn and you have to fail.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And you will never be perfect at making comics.
There's been a great little trail of messages this week on the Facebook group. B. Muir put a thing on saying, "Look, I keep trying, and I'm just not getting it. Is it possible to reteach yourself comics?" And I've never seen a more supportive train of messages from everyone, from guys who do abstract comics like Gareth, to pros in the industry like Lambeau. You know, loads of people sent really nice messages to this guy saying, "Oh, think about this or think about that." Simon Russell did a really interesting thing where he said, "Draw." I think it was him. He said, "Draw while you're walking along, and just make it instinctive, and you will find that imagination will be captured and stuff." Really helpful bit.
That's nice advice. Yeah.
Yeah. Really good stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
And like people saying, strip it back to the basics, and always remember the anatomy and stuff like that. And then I thought this is why we've got that group. That's the if I had to sum it up in one post, it'd be that one.
Yeah.
Brilliant stuff.
I was gonna say, I get it when you're reading a comic and you're kind of chasing this elusive moment where the art and the writing come together so perfectly. It just absolutely works. And the one that always jumps to mind is near the end of Airboy, where they set up a joke about like not forgetting the German uniform. And then it jumps the way it's laid out, the page and the layout and the writing, it drops to the next panel, which is on the far left of the page, because it's a double page spread. And it's one of the characters, and I forgot the uniform. And it's so well done. It's masterful. And it's moments like that we see it. It's just done so well. Like the script's on point, and the artists have delivered it so, executed it so well. And you see little bits and like that through comics, and like these flashes of brilliance. And yeah, that's what really kind of like, I said, I wish we could do shit like that. And that's what you aim for as a creator.
Yeah.
Stories can do anything. They can inspire, they can educate, they can do everything. And that, I think, personally, I just want to entertain. That's what I want to do with my books. But that's not to say that one day in the future, 5 years from now, I could be talking to you about some historical book that I'm working. You never know where life is going to take you or your creative process.
Erotic
fiction.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I've written that. You can read that at tonyesmond.blogspot.net.
Someone created tonyesmond.blogspot and just made it a parody of me, I would fucking love that. It would just make me laugh. It's me being angry. The amount of pictures of Steven Seagal I've received this week is unheard of.
Russian envoy, Tony, or something.
And should we do the other bit of it then? Yeah. So from the point of view of why do we do this? Why do we do this podcast? Why do you guys do it, and why do you keep doing it?
It's great fun, I found out so many comics I never would have been introduced to through this show, and met so many great creatives. It's fantastic.
I mean, it's always inspiring. It's always in a lot of ways, this show is the most social I've ever been in my life, and and this is coming from a really honest place now, guys.
He's going to tell us. Finally, he's telling us.
I've got no friends. No, but in all seriousness, though, like before, we do this and we've got quite a natural conversation and stuff. But normally in a social environment, I'm not a people person. I'm not a massively social, or I never thought I was. I didn't think I was good with new people, or if I didn't know someone, I was nervous about talking to them and stuff. But by doing this show, and obviously it started with people you know, and then it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and you build it. All of a sudden, there's a community coming together, and everyone's friends, and everyone, now I'm hugely excited about talking to that creator that I've never met before. And just finding out more, because I did essentially start this show to get the word out about a lot of books that and creators that not people know about, and I wanted to find out more about, you know, how people set out their books, the printing processes, you know, Kickstarter campaigns for one day in the future when I may do one. You know, there's loads of bits that I don't know. And the whole point, not the whole point of the show, but one of the major things that I'm most proud of this show is when people sort of say, that was fascinating and I learned so much about, I don't know, European comics. You know, I need to check out these books now because I didn't know they existed or I didn't know this. That is immensely gratifying, and I'm pleased that we've been able to do that, but it's also, if it wasn't fun, we wouldn't have been here for 162 episodes. We wouldn't have. It's just...
I agree with you around that, mate. People obviously think of me as sort of slightly verbose and strange, but the thing is, like, the comics has always been a world that I've only really, you know, occupied. I'm in a sort of fairly sort of active job where I have to be sort of quite vocal about stuff, but the comics has always been a little bit of an escape for that, and I was a little bit nervous about coming on here because I didn't really want to give away that it's not like a secret world but a personal world, I suppose.
It was yours,
but and I've come on and I have to say I love it, as you well know, you both go, well, as we could talk about comics fucking 7 days a week, non-stop, without getting bored. Just the beauty of the single image and the single panel and the line art and the story and the communication that it is a communication for me. Yeah. I think I love talking about it.
There's so many creators. I have this thing that, you know, if you see me tabling at a show, you know, there's normally, because of it, we've got an awesome pod table, there's a lot of people talking to us where there's always banter all the time and stuff. But, I still want to walk around and sort of pick up books.
On my own sometimes, or maybe just with you guys.
Yeah.
And just talk about buying comics and look at stuff. And
sometimes,
you know,
I want to interact with creators that I don't know before. But I still get that shyness. It is a shyness. I'm still not confident enough about going up to like a creator I don't know. Because we joke about it before, you have that when you walk across a con floor and every creator looks at you like, you know, you're the next sale. And I do get affected by that. I'm like that sort of like, oh, sometimes I need to know where I'm going. I have to beeline for it, but because of this show, just say we've spoken to a new creator on the show, and I know they're at a con, and I can go over and just immediately engage with them and talk with them, and, like, you know, I've just gathered so much from that, and, like, you know, it's a little bit of a confidence builder, but, and I think
it's a weird one, isn't it? It's for me. I mean, my job involves me talking to sort of politicians and crap like that occasionally, and I don't even think about it. I just do it, and there's no reservations. But the one of the few times I've been, you know, tongue-tied in my life was trying to get a sentence out to Brian Bendis and have a conversation with Keith Giffen and Jim Starlin, you know, and like, these guys, they're not just comic creators, they are comic creators, that's their job, you know. And it's weird that we've looked up to these people, but now we're able to talk to them on here is such a bonus, you know. When you think, fucking the people we've talked to, mate, do you know what I mean?
I know.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
I never thought I'd be sat in a Wagamama's with Pat Mills.
Yeah, I know. That was a real moment.
We love
Kitchen
you,
Vince and his cat army.
The good thing about these people is they actually listen to what we have to say, which is great, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
because as we always say, we don't know anything. We're not right. There is no right. There is no wrong. We're here to just talk about comics. But, you know, just to polish this one off, I just want to say something to a lot of people. Podcasts are such that, you know, we could just keep going forever. You know, even if there's no one listening, we could keep talking and stuff.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Yep Show sort of saying, oh, you know, this show wouldn't exist without you. Podcasts are such that every podcast would exist without an audience if the people want to make it. It is literally that simple.
And let's face it, some podcasts do.
Yeah, they do. We love that there's a group of people that listen to this show and this community that's been built up, and it's moved beyond the show. I mean, this show could stop, or, you know, it could keep going, or, you know, it could stagnate. But what I really like is this community of people that have really come together And they've all become sort of friends or sort of helping each other out, or there's convention organisers talking to convention organisers that may not have been, you know, we've got nothing to do with it, but there's an avenue that brought people together. You know, so we're kind of nothing without you, but you've done it all yourself. We haven't done
I wonder if anyone's got laid because of our podcast. That'd be good, wouldn't it?
There's a question.
If you've got laid because of the podcast, please write in and send Polaroids if you possess them.
Got laid in spite of.
Or got laid during.
Oh,
that'd be brilliant.
Oh, my God. Yes. So, we're very proud of this show.
We got a bit emotional there, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. Yeah. We did. But, if you're listening to this show... Yeah. We love you and the work you do for comics. So, no matter what it is, in any format. So there you go. Now that the emotional bit's gone with, what's the next question?
Next question, Simon Russell, mentioned him again, and he has asked, "What non-comic buying groups should people target, or could people target?" Now, I had to think about this, and I think you need to think about what your comic's about, and I know. Having spoken to Tim Truman, he's done a couple of Western comics, and he sells them at like Western memorabilia shows and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I think if you've got a martial arts comic, you go to a martial arts convention.
I'll never forget when I heard Mike Norton talking. He did Battle Pug, obviously. I'm sure a lot of our listeners have heard about Battle Pug.
I've got a Battle Pug t-shirt, yeah.
Conan the Barbarian, but with a giant pug dog. Look it up, you can find it online. It's still online, isn't it?
I think it is, it's a webcomic, wouldn't it?
When he collected it, he went to dog shows. He literally went to dog shows to sell it. And did quite well, because there was nothing else quite like it. So, you know. I think also, if you've got like a game, a comic book or something that has like real video game elements, like really leans into the video game sort of market, see if there's any sort of, you know, video game show, or, you know, even if it's a small independent sort of video game show or something, you know, just trying to get your work in a place where there's nothing else quite like it.
Stuff like the Reckless Heroes, like if they went to a video game convention where they got like the Street Fighter stuff, their style would very much kind of play into that, and I think they'd do really well.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. The Troll 2 Force, if you went to like one of those, the gaming things like the Warhammer stuff, that would go down a storm there. It's an interesting one where you can kind of pitch your kind of comic and where it would find a place. Horror comics, like there's horror film festivals and stuff. That's the kind of place to get your money.
I mean, I would have thought that would be a good place to have your horror comic. I mean, the double-edged sword with a lot of these places though, isn't it? If you have a lot, especially when they're other conventions and stuff, are the audience looking for comics?
It's worth a try.
I don't know whether
it would be successful or not, but
if you're at a horror film convention, I reckon there's quite a lot of crossover audience there. Like the pug one, that's a bit of a fuck knows how you'd get on there. I don't know how that would work or not. But I would take a punt on the horror one over the dog show one. I did go to a pug festival relatively near me.
It was just
pugs everything. It was like the fucking Wicker Man. you went into this like little like church hall thing. Just loads of pugs, and then like they'd have pug teapots, pug jumpers, pug cushions, pug everything. Like there's people sitting down, like there's having a pug show, and people talking about pugs. And I felt like just turning around to my wife, have I gone mental? Is this real? Is this what's happening now?
Why were you there, Dan? Though, but what was?
Do you know anything? I would go to him, this would be a laugh, and then he turn up, and it's not a laugh.
There's a big glass bowl. Everyone's putting their car keys in, and everyone's dressed up like dogs.
Everyone's taking a piece. Whatever it is, they call it. Consider going to furry conventions.
Anyone other than
me. There you go.
I think in all seriousness, though, you've got to think about the audience of your comic, because I think let's face it, every comic has an audience, doesn't it, of some kind.
If you
don't think about it when you're making it, I think there's always a subconscious spot in your mind that knows what some sort of target demographic is for the work
you've
done.
You guys on the spot, where would you consider if we were going to sell the ACP comic somewhere? Interesting. What con would you go to? What event would you hit up? Because we've got three different things going on ours.
I think film festival.
Yeah.
Because there's a film element to them all. There's a grindhouse element to them all, isn't there?
Yes. Yeah.
Like a grindhouse film festival or some kind like that.
Yes.
I think tweak the pitch to make it appeal to that audience.
Yeah. Each story is a different grindhouse, not cliche, but you know, genre.
Yeah. Yeah. Play on it.
And also with the rise of those, you know, the 80s VHS sort of world and like, you know, that whole retro thing, you know, a retro film festival or something, you know, just get it into the hands of these, we should write these down. Because a lot of ours have those sort of retro feels, don't they? Whether it be from the 60s, 70s or 80s.
There was one, we missed it by about a day when I went out for a curry with Jason Wilson and Nick Prolix in Cambridge. There was, we literally just missed a sort of grindhouse film festival. And that would have been ideal. I'd have had a table there. I'd have paid for that and just done it myself. If you didn't go. Could have done more, all that sort of thing.
It's not something I've really thought about, actually, thinking beyond. I mean, we've talked about it on this show, but I haven't really thought beyond the comic circuit. So maybe that's definitely an interesting avenue to go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Good. And the last one is Small Press. It's from Yeston Pettigrew. Is Small Press a way of talking to an audience, or is it a way of developing a career? Can be both, can't it? It should be at least the first one.
Yeah.
And it can be the second one.
I mean, people have demonstrated that they can do the second one if you want that.
Yeah.
There's no reason to not go for that. I mean, as far as I can tell, a lot of the bigger studios advocate that you work with other people and get that experience under your belt before you start applying to them. So
yeah,
I think the second one's definitely like try and get that before you think about applying.
Yeah. And the lines are blurred between the two now. I think there's less of a delineation of being like a Marvel and DC artist, and even an image artist. There's some people who are kind of still got their foot in the small press camp, but are doing work.
Yeah,
you know.
And there's certainly people that, for instance, we've spoken about on the show before, and they've done like small press, either a comic or a web comic, and they've gotten books printed at Image, you know, which is obviously a step up level. But obviously, when you're working for a company like that, there's still a massive amount of responsibility on your shoulders because you need to shout about it, you need to get it, you need to talk about the diamond codes, you need to get into all of that. So the way
we're still a one man industry, aren't we?
Exactly.
Even when we're big, we're still having to promote our own books.
Exactly. You know? But the way you handle yourself. And there's a company that's looking for like up and coming writers, or not even just writers or artists, you know, people to work in the production of comics, and they look at someone that has handled themselves professionally, has worked hard, you know, has made themselves in some ways unavoidable. Do you know what I mean? How many times is like, oh yeah, I remember seeing that on Twitter. Someone posted something about, you know, what is that creator doing? You never know, you know, you always got to put your best foot forward, you know, be professional, respectful, and you never know. You could end up working, you know, for any kind of independent publisher. Never mind, because people always think, oh, career, people will probably think Marvel and DC. The comics aren't that anymore. There's publishing careers in so many independent avenues now. There are independent publishers that are thriving.
Yeah, look, I mean, success story for me is look at Luke Pearson and Hilda.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, he's not taking Marvel, DC or Image, is he?
Yeah.
You know.
But also kind of building up that big following online, that sort of speaks for itself in as much that they can see that you're popular with the fans and you know how to cultivate an audience. And that's one of the things they're going to want.
Yeah.
Aside from the comic stuff.
Yeah. Names like Sarah Grayley. Do you know what I mean? She's still doing both, isn't she? She's still doing both. You know, and definitely got like an audience.
Mark Ellerby, these sort of people as well, you know?
There's a guy who does like some of the Street Fighter stuff called the Chamber. I can't remember his real name, but he started up on DeviantArt and then just kept on posting, getting better and better and better, getting a massive audience, and then now he's doing it full time.
Yeah.
And it's great.
What all of these people have done is they've worked on stuff that they've put a lot of hard work into it. Every project is should never really be a stepping stone. You've got to put a lot into it, because when you put a lot into it, the results show, and the results then move you on to the next thing, you know. All of these wonderful, right, like we talk about, oh, Donny Cates, oh, I love Donny Cates, did Baby Teeth, though, he's done this and that and the other. He's tearing it up at Marvel. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he was doing that.
Yeah, Death of the Inhumans is fucking amazing.
Yeah, and he's putting his all into that. But before that, he was putting his all into his own books, and still is. So, you know, you just...
Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah.
That seems to be the wise game at the moment, isn't it? Do you remember a few years ago we had the Bendis against Kirkman? Do you stay with a big company or do you self-publish with Image? And they did like a funny panel, didn't they, as if they were arguing, and then they both did it well and presented their own arguments. But I think, kind of, for me at the moment, you got to do both. You got to have that Marvel DC book, but you can also have that indie book as well, you know.
Yeah.
I think there's a bit of that going on, isn't there?
Yeah. Because no matter what you say, like, if you're an indie creator, you've got stories in your head that don't have these big characters in.
Tell those stories with the big characters, really, can you?
And you just think, one day I'm going to do that book, and that will probably be the one that makes you money, probably. But don't do it for money or personal gain, because it's flipping obvious and usually dull when people do that.
Yeah, isn't it? Yeah, it really is at the moment, isn't it? Yeah, everyone's more canny now to that, aren't they? I think.
Yeah.
Well, that was good. Well done, everyone, on those.
Yeah, nice one. Yes.
Yeah, thank you, everyone who wrote in.
Yes, yeah, we covered them all in the end. but they certainly made us a little bit more emotional this week.
Yeah,
Perhaps we don't often self-reflect, do we?
No,
on the show.
No, no.
There we go.
Mostly just take the piss out of each other.
Yeah. But it's been emotional, gents. doesn't Minnie Jones say that in Lockstock?
Does,
yeah,
I believe. Yeah. Is that right?
That was the start of a mess, wasn't it? Why are they ever letting him fucking act to that?
You know what's on the other night? It was fucking Escape Plan. I forgot he was in that.
He's
a guard in that, yeah.
That's an alright film, you know, I think.
Is that the Schwarzenegger?
Naga?
Schwarzenegger Stallone thing. That's the one where Stallone has a conversation with 50 Cent. And I cannot understand a word of the fucking conversation, because they've both been punched in the face so many times. Yeah. They can't actually talk properly.
I think
there's
Mr.
a part
Stallone
two of that with fucking Dave Bautista.
It's out now, isn't it? It's on Sky. You can rent it on Sky.
Regardless of what you think about that whole situation, I've got to take my hat off to Dave Bautista in the fact that he just said, right, this is what's going to happen, and you got to bring James Gunn back on board, otherwise I'm gone.
Yeah. Whatever you think about whatever's happened, he's stuck by his mate, isn't he?
You boil it down to its essence, and it's literally like, he's my friend, and I just want, you know, that was literally what I read in it. Didn't you think
it'd roll over?
Yeah,
I'm standing by him.
Do you want to hear my prediction about what's going to happen?
Go on.
James Gunn is going to do something to prove what a good guy is. He's going to, I don't know, pay money to a charity, help something or other, help some person, do some act. And then Disney are going to have him back, and he's not going to direct it, but they're going to give him the writing credit for it. That's my prediction. There's obviously a load of movie executives are going, everyone wants him back. What are we going to do? Well, we can't back down, but he could do something that could get him back, and we could both be proven right. You know, I reckon that's what's going to happen. It may have happened by the time this comes out. Do you know
potentially,
what I mean?
I think they kind of. If some more of them throw their kind of hats in the ring and say that I'm the fucking savers, Dave over there, they're not gonna have a choice,
and
are they?
Dave will beat you to death if he comes back. Yeah.
God bless Bautista. He doesn't give a fuck, does he?
Doesn't see.
We've got kind of gotten by the nads in that situation, haven't you? Well, like, he's got the power there. If he doesn't do it, he doesn't seem to give a shit.
Yeah, well, he doesn't do it, but you know, they'll just write him off or recast him. Do you know what I mean? It's just, he's got plenty of money. But
are you going to recast that role? In the middle,
they'll just fucking write it off. They'll just CGI it. I'm not saying this, but if you look at the grand scheme of things, there's a massive corporate giant, or an or like just an actor who's, you know, they could.
I just think it's easier for them to just give, like, don't do something like Tony said. Just do like a PR stunt.
Probably.
It's not yes or no. It is these things. People don't look at it as if, right, we'll either sack him or we won't have him or whatever. Do you know what I mean? I think that there's a negotiation there somewhere. There's got to be a negotiation going on.
It's definitely interesting.
You know? Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah, they're good movies. The comics are better, but they're good movies. Do you know what I mean?
I don't read the comics at Guardians, so but I'll take your word for it.
They're all good. Yeah, they're all good. Yeah, even the original one, which is the old Stallone group that you see in the movie.
I used to read that with Jim Valentino.
Oh, yeah, even before that, in the 70s and stuff. Fucking weirdness. Yeah, but good. Yeah.
Speaking of weirdness, do we have any shout-outs?
Yes, I've got one.
Go for it.
Go and buy Gallant and Amos by Rob Barnes, published by Fair Spark Books, which is the publishing name for Little Heroes Comics. So go and do the right thing. Go to littleheroescomics.co.uk and get a copy of Gallant and Amos, which is a kind of barbarian and a dragon. And it's there's a little bit of asterisk about it. It's a great, fun comic. I absolutely loved it when I read it. I've just been sent the rough for issue 2, which I can't wait to read tomorrow, which looks amazing as well. There you go. That's my one.
Nice. I've just got a couple. First up is, I'm not sure if we said it on last week's show. I think I've neglected to say it, but got a bit of fan art from Cliff Cumber of me.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
He's been very generous and sent us lovely bits of fan art in the past, and he's an amazing artist. Anyone who's seen his fan art in issue 2 of Awesome Comics will know that he can absolutely just knock it out of the park. But he actually did a funny sort of cartoon of me while I record every show, and I've got some sort of what I called it, like a murder board or whatever it was. Lots of in jokes, lots of hilarity, and he didn't make me look like a complete dick, which I truly appreciate.
He left that for me, which said Tony's dick or something like that on the review screen.
So thank you very much as always, Cliff. And another one, I'm pretty sure we mentioned it on last week's show anyway, but there's a lot going on in the worlds of Laura Trinder and Chris Wildgoose.
So good.
Massive congratulations.
Oh, yeah. I'm on a little WhatsApp group.
Huge congratulations on their fantastic news.
I've got to tell you, it couldn't happen to fucking nicer, more talented people.
Tell the news to the listeners. Some of them might not have heard it.
Go on, then.
Here you go.
Go on, Vince. You're doing this, your segue thing.
Well, Night Post is being turned into a movie. Have I got that right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, is that what it is? Yeah.
Yes. And
Laura was in the first 10 show, wasn't she? She's like the first 10.
Yeah, she was. She's the one who famously said, "Shush now, Vince," which is boss.
Yeah. And now she's my Parks and Recreation best friend. So.
Oh, is she?
Yeah.
You did talk about yoga as well.
Yeah,
that was good.
Yeah. No, but like Laura and Ben just put out a brilliant book with Night Post that had, you know, when you look at that book, you immediately think, God, I'd love to see some sort of adaptation of this. And brilliant news. Hopefully, you know, obviously it's early day. It always is with movies, isn't it? You know, we're talking about it now, but whatever happens, couldn't happen to the nicer group of people. All the good stuff that's happening with them, and they got another.
And they're in the States at the moment, aren't they? They're on holiday in, I think they're in Florida or somewhere.
Are they?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What, Chris and Laura?
I think so. Yeah.
And I know Laura's been working with Ben Reed on a book, hasn't she?
Yeah.
On another book. Do you know what? I haven't got the notes with me at the moment.
I'm afraid, dude.
There's another exciting book on its way. Which Chris has been chatting about. So if you follow either of them on Instagram,
and I think if you put Laura Trinder into Waterstones, you can pre-order it.
Yes,
there you go.
Yeah. So exciting stuff.
Cool.
Yeah. So there you go. Well, I guess we'll have to have them back on the show now, won't we?
Anytime.
Yeah. Still one of my favourite pictures is you cuddling, Christian at Cardiff and giving me the V's.
I'm not cuddling him, I'm embracing him. It's a real galaxy sort of chocolate moment.
You were very excited on Sunday because you told me that the grey hair in your head makes you look like Doctor Strange. You kept telling me that all day.
Yeah. What, not look at this, day. I look like Doctor Strange. We had a chat about it, and yes, I've got like silver wings on the side of my hair. It's happened naturally. Oh, nice. It's happened naturally. And do you know what, mate? If I was bothered about grey hair, I'd just colour it. But I grew up
We're not, are we?
No, I loved the look of characters like Doctor Strange, Reed Richards, Nick Fury, and they always had
Nick
that,
Fury. Yeah.
They had the badass sort of silver wings on, and I'm getting it. I couldn't be happier.
So pleased, don't you? Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm not like them in any other sort of way. No. Shape or form, but
millionaires. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I'll just take the grey.
Sorcerer Supreme.
You told me that you do that trick. You say, look, it's like Doctor Strange's cloak, and you manage to hang your towel on something. Is that something you've done before? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's not like you sort of bending over and screaming Dormammu at the top of your voice.
A faceless one is coming.
Oh, dear. Anyway.
Do the faceless ones look like big penises? Maybe not.
Oh dear. But anyway, do we have any recommendations this week, gents?
Yes. You go first, V, go on.
Me? No, you can go first. Yeah. You always throw me under the
bus. I've got one ready.
Dan's got two. Dan, you can go first.
Yeah, the first one is Rob Jones sent through from Manius, Circadian Rhythms. It's a brand
That's
new fantasy
mouthful.
Adventure. It is. I had to look up how to pronounce that word. So
nice one.
I'm not that clever.
But you still put the work in. Well done, Dan.
10 seconds of Googling. Just, I didn't want to look like a fool anymore. It's a brand new fantasy adventure about mist dragons, fisticuffs, and tales of daring do. They're going to release it at Thought Bubble. It's a 13-page one shot on 13. The
26th.
13-page. Don't know what the odd number. Maybe a pin-up at the back. For £3, and it's going to be available shortly online afterwards. It's by Mike Sandbrook, Rob Jones, and Gustavo Vargas, which I've not seen in Gustavo's work before. It's really nice stuff. Really interesting.
Yeah, I'd look at some of the art you showed me. You sent us a picture, didn't you? It does look lovely. Yeah, really nice.
Yeah, really.
So check that out. If you go to facebook.com/Madius Comics, and there have some more info about it there. So, yeah, go check that one out.
Nice.
Did you say you had another one?
I'll do mine.
I've got another one. The other one was one in passing, but I've finished reading the first issue of Eagles of Rome.
Oh my God! So
and we've
good.
Been I think we're going to leave like a full proper review for later because I want to get the rest of them and read them through.
We need to just do an Enrico Marini episode.
Yeah, sure. Man,
just talk about him.
Yeah, maybe we just we reach out to him and see if he can come on because he's just the fucking best.
Incredible!
It's great. Yeah, it's just unbelievable. It's really kind of inspiring seeing his work and the story. It's just some of the scenes in it are quite unabashed and kind of just. It's just mature comic telling and it's just so well done.
It's so good. The authorities are coming to take Dan away because he's having a moment.
there's panels in that have as much art in them as whole comics do elsewhere.
Obviously, I mean, he's also done some work for DC at the moment, which is beautiful. Follow him on Instagram. We'll put a link for his name in the show notes. But just like so many of the artists from Europe Comics, they're putting astounding stuff on. But I want to see this guy. And I know the work he's done on DC has got a good following, and it's a bit of a cult. But I want to see him on some of these sort of bigger titles as well. You know, give him something nice. And
okay, what title would you give him? Come on, let's have one. Let's have a title you give him.
Oh, right.
I'm going to say one. I'd put him on New Gods.
Okay, I would love to see him give Jonah Hex a crack.
Dead
Star.
Yeah,
that'd be fantastic.
Shout.
To be fair, any period piece, he would just sell at.
See, I go for something different. I'd give him Aquaman.
Okay, interesting.
Okay.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I say that in full confidence because it seems whatever genre or style of art he puts his pen to, he just absolutely knocks it out of the park.
Yeah.
Do you remember the DC book Warlord, the Mike Grell book?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Mike Grell
yeah.
isn't available to draw it because obviously I love him. Then he would be my second choice. He'd be amazing. Or Hawkman as well.
Yes, that'd be great.
In the same sort of flavour as Aquaman. You could do that, couldn't you?
Yeah.
Your tweet on Aquaman went a bit viral.
earlier in the week, didn't it, Vince?
Oh, yes. I couldn't believe this. And it led to me ignoring most of the replies. I just caught us. I took a screenshot of a tweet, wasn't it? Yeah, that's what I did, wasn't it?
Yeah.
DC book, the new Aquaman DC book is going to be more Wonder Woman than Superman. And I just simply took a screenshot and said, can't he just be Aquaman? But of course, there was quite a few people who took this phrase literally and were trying to explain it to me. Of course I know what they mean by it.
It's
just the Twitter and the internet in general. People
miss the irony and the satire and the sarcasm, don't they?
I mean, I still stick by the fact, you know, I think what I was talking about was just the easy go-tos, isn't it? Of like, oh yeah, it's more in this tone sort of thing. It's like, no, just why can't
and it? To be fair, what the fuck does that mean anyway? It's going to be more Wonder Woman than it's going to be. What the fuck does that mean?
Yeah,
that's nonsense.
The thing they're saying is it's going to be more like the Wonder Woman film than the Man of Steel film, as in people are going to like it and it's going to make us money.
What they mean is they think it's going to look like fucking ancient Greece underwater.
Yeah.
That's the where part of that's going, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's not.
No. And Aquaman should be a unique thing on his own. The whole problem with Aquaman a lot of the times is they try to make it like anything else. You know, the other things.
Yeah.
It shouldn't.
Aquaman's been about for about 70 fucking years as well. I think he can stand on his own too.
But that was, you're right, Dan. That was quite an interesting social experiment.
Yeah.
And led to me just. Yeah. I would
sometimes
look at
they just catch and away they go. And then it's happened to me once or twice, and I've had to put a turn the notifications off because it's like, I don't fucking.
Yeah.
It's fucking plebs tweeting you. You know, fuck off. Yeah.
And it's never anyone you know. Oh, dear. Anyway, where were we?
Recommendations. Shall I go?
Oh, yeah, go for it, Tony.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk about a book called The Lumberjack, which after I gave Sarah Harris a copy of Killraven, she gave me this as a present, which is very nice of her. It's by Ian Moore, who's a Bristol-based artist. It's A5, 24 pages, black and white. It's a wordless and short tale of a lumberjack in the cold and snow-lined forest, in a forest of leafless trees. And he heads out to chop down a tree. And he swings and hits the tree, and the forest suddenly sort of comes to life and is alerted to this sort of thing that's happening, and owls turn around and look at him and all this sort of thing. And he keeps trying to chop this tree down. He's just getting nowhere, and he keeps hitting it and nothing's happening. And slowly the artist, this is a really sort of strange looking book in a good way. The eye of the lumberjack starts morphing into the rings of a tree. If you cut a tree in half, you know, down the middle, whatever it is, you get the rings of the tree, and this sort of morphs into it, and slowly the lumberjack gets swallowed up into the tree. It's really, really strange. And it becomes a sort of branch in this sort of quiet forest. And I'm going to read the end because it's worth it, I think, for this. And it's worth seeing because the art speaks more than the story does a little bit. And right at the end, there's this sort of quiet forest, and this man's become this sort of tree. Another lumberjack turns up. This time he's got a chainsaw with him, and he sort of just stares at this tree, and that's where it ends. And it's got this sort of poignant ending, and it's slightly sarcastic and a little bit of a wink. And I really enjoy that sort of the way it's done. It's got it's really sort of experimental. It looks like I'm going to say sort of lino cut almost to it. It's got part of it is it's really textured. The trees have got this sort of real texture to them. You feel like you could almost rub the tree and it would feel different on the page, if that makes sense. It doesn't, but it almost like sticks up. And there's just double page spreads of it's black and white of the branches of abstract trees, you know, sticking out of the snow and sort of leaning against things and leaning at strange angles. And it's actually a really beautiful book. There's a sort of interpretive, it morphs into a sort of an interpretive sort of abstract thing that is just absolutely gorgeous. It's a dark joke at its heart, which I kind of like. And it's very simple. It's a very quick read, but you can go back and you can look at some of the art and you can think, oh, that's actually really attractive. The lumberjack is a kind of, I don't know, sort of slightly abstract beard with a tartan shirt, you know, it's that sort of thing. The only thing that really stands out and you think, oh, that's really realistic, is an owl that sort of sits there watching, which is really gorgeously done. have a look. He does do colour as well. Have a look at his Instagram, which is iam.ian.m. Have a look at his Instagram. You can go to ianmooreillustration.bigcartel.com and get some of his art. There's some lovely prints as well. Really nice stuff. I don't know. He kind of, some of his art reminds me of a sort of, I don't know, like a satirical New Yorker cartoon. Maybe, I don't know, with a sort of wilder style, but more of a sort of angular style. Someone like Peter Brooks or something like that. It's, I don't know, it's just strange and interesting and different, I suppose. His website is ianmooreillustration.com, so pop over there and have a look. Really nice stuff, really good. And a new, completely new to me, out of the blue. I think Sarah lives not far from Bristol, does she? So I think she sort of has got this and brought it and swapped it for a Killraven comic, which was quite nice. There you go. Thanks, Sarah.
Awesome. Nice. My pick this week is one that I found on Comic House, which intrigued me. It's from a creator called JWC, who I don't know anything about. It's called The Citric Arc. And it was published in 2015. It's now on Comic House for anyone. It's also available on Amazon and stuff, so it's been around for a couple of years. And it's just, basically it's a one and done sort of graphic novel. There's about, it's about two sisters. Now the actual synopsis is, despite growing up in the same household and being only 1 year apart in age, Sienna and Azure often find themselves at odds. To Sienna, Azure's carefree nature seems selfish, while Azure's views Sienna's pragmatism as snobbery. Because of this, both girls accumulate feelings of distrust and bitterness, which make a true reconciliation impossible unless unforeseen circumstances intervene. So, yeah, I mean, how would I describe this? It's obviously part family drama, part, you know, there's bits of comedy, there's tragedy, there's a story of these two girls growing up from kids. They're told in little chapters that are varying in length and sort of style, and how these two sort of annoy each other as little kids, and then as they get on, they're just two completely different personalities, even though they're only a year apart, and their parents who are sort of putting up with them fighting, and then their father is ill, and that plays out over the years as well. There's lots of stuff going on. There's, you know, part soap opera, part sort of character drama. But it's also, it's quite funny in places as well. I mean, one thing I will say about this book is it's very poignant, and you know, because there are certain jumps in time as well. Like, you know, the kids will be at sort of high school, and then all of a sudden they're teens, so it has these sort of moments in time, so you really are following it, which it sounds like a big jump, but you are, you kind of, your brain sort of fills in the gaps of how their sort of relationship has broken down in between the years and stuff, which
I'm looking at it now. Is it a UK based thing, or is it
I believe it's US. I haven't seen it before. I mean, I absolutely adore the artwork. I think it feels like there's a sort of a watercolor pencil or something like that. It's probably all digital. There's some
great use of torches at one point. They use like I can't for the life of me imagine how they do that. It just looks really nice.
There's when the kids are young and they go down into the basement.
That's what I just looked at. Yeah,
and one of the fascinating things about this spread, and you have to see it to sort of truly get it, is the speech bubbles normally are fully viewed, but when these kids go down into the dark, when they're in the shadows, the speech bubbles are also in that shadow. You can still read it, but you know, you have to focus a little bit more. That was such a nice touch that I've never seen done before. Have you?
I actually think this has taken some time to do, because you can see the art evolving a bit, can't you, as it goes on.
Yeah,
it's not bad or good. It just changes and moments are different and more detailed, you know.
And there's wonderful sort of playing of panels as well. There's one panel which is someone just walking upstairs in a huff. But the use of the negative space, which is the staircase, which gives the panel like a real sort of unique shape and sort of splits it up. There's a wonderful sort of sense of design. And that's, you know, that's just the aesthetics of it. Before I knew it, I read this in one go. I just sat down and just went all the way through it. And I thought, dropped a review on Comic House as well, saying I loved it. Yeah, it's, you know, there's no sort of massive, there's no fights, there's no superheroes. This is about two sisters who have got a really fractured relationship, and their lives go in two sort of separate sort of panels. That one of the a nice little touch that I quite like between it is between each chapter. It's clearly designed as a print book as well, but there's always like a sort of a panel strip that begins each chapter. It's almost like, you know, photo booths. You know, you get in a photo booth and you get those panels of four.
Yeah, isn't it? Yeah.
And you see these two girls, and they're always like that's normally the funny bit, because it's these two girls when they were little and they're just sort of annoying each other, and that would really sort of break up. You know, you'd have like a really dark moment, but that would really sort of alleviate the tension a little bit sometimes, or just.
It's not
add
short
to the,
either, you know. Is it? It's not a short book.
No, it's 127 pages. Like I say, because of the chapters of it, it's nicely sort of. You know, you could read a block and then come back later.
Yeah.
My only sort of reservation with this, and I'm guessing this is the creator's first book, and the lettering, I think.
It's a little bit too mechanical for me.
Yeah.
At points.
I mentioned this sort of briefly to Tony at one point. You know, I look at the lettering, and there's part of me that just wants to go in. I'd love to have a stab at lettering this. Do you know what I mean? I'd love to sort of just think, right, you know, just
give me... It's because it's so personal. It almost lends itself to me to some hand lettering, you know?
Yeah.
Because the conversation is so personal, you can almost personalize the words, if that makes sense.
Yeah. You know, and that's, it's purely the sort of dialogue stuff as well. There's nothing, you know, the sound effects and everything else that is just great. There's pages in it which would just be beautiful prints, you know, quite poignant. There's one where one of the characters is looking down in the reflection of this water as a feather is sort of on the water, but it's not like a crystal clear reflection of her. You know, there's, you can tell there's lots of different things going on. I was a big fan of this actually, and that's another reason I love doing the show, because like you just open yourself up to, you know, books like this.
It reminds me that book Samuel Williams did recently about his kids, from Good Comics. It's got style to it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. There's a wonderful sense of tone and colour. There's a very sad. There's one chapter that is a funeral, and it's pretty much a silent chapter that is all done in greys. You know, the girls have like sort of reddish sort of hair, so that's almost the pop of colour, because the whole day is sort of grey, but there are autumnal sort of plants and stuff around that. It's just so, you know, you feel it. There's not a single word spoken, but you completely feel the moment. And it just shows when comics do it right, when you can just do so much with it, I think. And almost chapters like that bring you into the story even more.
It's good.
So, yeah, the Citric arc, you can like buy printed copies of it on sort of Amazon and stuff like that. American creator, I think that they've got some more work. I did see them on Twitter. They're just called JWC, but at Track the Numbers. But they don't have like many followers, and I think they're just making comics for themselves, I think.
Oh, nice.
But I wonder how they found
Comic House. I wonder if it was a recommend from someone.
I'd certainly like to sort of find out more about this creator, because, you know, I mean, some of that artwork is just absolutely stunning. I absolutely loved it. So, yeah, read it on Comic House, find it on Amazon, you know, just find the creator online. It's worth checking out. So there you go.
Yeah, nice one. Good. Shows the value of Comic House. That's
exactly.
A good, well spent there.
Yeah, exactly. It's a 127-page book.
Yeah.
Jesus. Yeah. So, that's another show in the bag. As always, we went all over the shop, but had a lot of fun doing it. It's always nice when it's just us three sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
It's nice and cozy. Yeah. But yeah, we hope you enjoyed it and enjoyed our ranting. I don't think you'll have any problems with anything we said, will they?
I don't know.
But if you do...
I'll ask Marge.
Yeah, ask Marge. Came up with a brilliant hashtag at True Believers that I probably shouldn't say on this show. But... But you can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. We've talked about it a few times in this show. The Awesome Comics 3 is going to be available at Nottingham. We are still open for letters about the fan letters and fan art. And if you get them to us
now, come on, guys, send your letters in. I really want some fucking ridiculous letters this time.
Really? But if you've got them, then send them to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. I'll probably figure out a deadline for the letters somewhere soon. Put a proper deadline
A couple of weeks.
Probably mid-September. Get them to us mid-September.
If you're thinking about writing, write it. There's a bit of advice for you.
Do it.
Only has to be a couple of lines, isn't it?
Then Tony will waffle on with an answer for bloody God knows how long. But anyway, yes, it's similar. Tony's
got some fan art lined up already, haven't we?
We've got a few bits now, haven't we?
Yeah. And that page is going to be cracking, as it was in issue two. Yeah, so send you that to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at The Awesome Pod, where we announce what's going on. I know someone, was it Mauro that said recently that we announce stuff on Twitter? Why don't we do it on the Facebook?
In a Mauro way.
I don't really do Facebook. The only reason I go on Facebook is to look at the amazing group that is Awesome Comics Talk, which is...
Good old Mauro's very supportive. We love you, Mauro. We're only winding you up, mate.
We should just link the Twitter account to Facebook. I know that fucking... it's quite annoying, that, but... So any tweet we put out on the pod just pops up.
I'll have to talk about it off air.
I don't know
if I can do that with the podcast page, because I've got my Facebook linked to my Twitter, but I don't know how you do it with a group page. Anyway, we'll talk about that boring bollocks off air. If you go on facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast, that's where we post all kinds of stuff. Yeah. So thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, leave a lovely review and maybe subscribe. That'd be nice. We like people saying anything about us. We're whores. Thank you for listening to us. If you heard us on Spotify, we've noticed an uptake in those as well. So thank you very much, now that we're legit. And we're also on many networks. So thank you if you listen to us on things like Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What other networks are we on, Tony?
Pod, the all-new Yang.
Sometimes I just think you're just reading whatever's in front of you.
Well, I've got it in front of me. I'm going to take a picture of it and send it to you now.
Always catches me off guard when you ask that question.
It's like for a little look behind the scenes, I call Dan and Vince babes. It's like a little phrase I have.
Yeah.
And literally every time I say to Dan, "See you, babes," he laughs.
Great.
Oh, dear. But apart from babes, where can people find us online, etc.? Tony, go on. Okay. You know you're always first.
I know. Ezohyz. If you go to Never On Anything, last week when you hear this, I put a review up for The Human Beings, issue 6. Within the text of the piece, I prove that Stuart McCune is, in fact, a hitman. And he'll do a hit for you at £20 a week for 4 weeks. You can pay him in installments.
That's a good price.
Yeah, I thought so. And if your loved one does happen to be at the Debenhams in Stevenage tomorrow at 11:30, Stuart will kill them for you.
Brilliant.
But yeah, otherwise...
And they say you can't put a price on a life. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. But I have to say, Human Beings continues to be my go-to book. I find it both interesting and inspiring to create. So pay attention to his Kickstarter. He's got a Kickstarter going live this week, which is another thing of great joy for me. So, he's a good lad and a good pal of mine. There you go.
Splendid.
Cool.
Dan.
I'll go into the spiel. You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Nice. Yes, which is tearing it up once more. I do love a bit of Vanguard.
I should go for the speed on that again. Remember, I used to get
it. Yeah. Go on, try it now. Go on.
You can find me online at Vanguard Comic. It'll be vanguard@vanguardcomic.com.
Do it!
Kill me, I'm here.
House of Yang.
Tony's got his Yang out.
Getting the Yang out for the lads.
Yang, for anyone who thinks I'm being filthy, is a martial arts comic from the 70s. Fuck you all.
Nice. And you can follow me on
Twitter.
Fuck
Yang all.
You follow me on Twitter. Who's eating a packet of crisps?
Nobody.
Tony.
That was actually I pulled a comic out of a bag and I was screwing it up to put in my bin. The comic. The bag ripped when I pulled it out of the bag.
Oh, right.
Sorry.
I've told you about playing with your bag when we're on on the show.
Stop. Story about that.
His hands. God, he's...
Oh, my God.
I've got a story about that. I'll tell you it later.
All right. You can follow me on Twitter at Jester Diablo, and you can find out more about my comic at redmashfrommars.com. Thank you for listening, as always, folks. Enjoy the following week of comics and reading and just being inspired by everything you do. And keep making comics, because we want to read them. So, as always, from Dan, Tony and myself, have a brilliant week. And what do they do?
Stay fucking awesome.
Yes, but let's hear Tony say it.
Stay awesome.
Thank you. Goodbye, everyone.
It sounds like children's television.
Vince Guinea's pound of flesh.
Yeah. This is he takes great pleasure in just bullying me at the end of every show.
Yeah. That's what you get for playing with your bag. Bye.
Bye.
Can you hear me? Is my microphone muted? It did pop up with saying...
Can you hear Vince?
Yeah.
Tony.
Is he on still?
Sorry, don't
Vince,
fuck...
Are you still there, Vince?
Don't fuck with me.
I can't hear him, Dan. I'm sorry. Can you hear him, Dan? I can't...
Vince, I can't hear nothing coming through.
Vince.
Right, can you hear me now? You are a pair of fucking pricks. Because I'm a little... Right. You're both going to fucking pay for that in some way, shape or form. I mean, I will say, I do admire how quick you were to both be on the same page with that. That was very impressive.